This is the Pitch Fishing Academy show number 81. This is the Pitch Fishing Academy cricket show. You can find us at pitchfishing.com and email us on mycricketcoach@pitchfishing.com. My name's David Hinchliffe in the UK.
And I'm Kevin Sampath in Australia. Coming up on the show, our guest coach Sam Lavery answers your questions. And David's team has an unlucky day. Well, unlucky, David, or your team just didn't turn up on the day. What happened, David?
We did turn up. We got the first part right. We managed to turn up, and warm ups went exceptionally well. And it all started to go downhill after that. We've had a problem all season of bowling very well and batting not very well. As you know, if you listen regularly to the show, you know that we've been rolling sides over, but we haven't been able to back that up with decent batting performances. And that's exactly what happened again this week. So it's starting to get a little bit frustrating.
Yeah.
I lost the toss second week in a row, and they decided to bat. And they finished on 145. We bowled them out fairly quickly. Bowled them out in 33 overs. So again, it should have been easy. We were 32 for 3, 45 for 4, and then 58 for 5. So when you're 58 for 5, you're always going to be struggling, even when the total's only 145. We could only manage 4 runs between the last 4 batsmen. So wow. we were rolled over. And the worst part was their bowling wasn't particularly good. We just found ways to get ourselves out. So we got beaten and we fell quite a few runs short, unfortunately. Overall, it was a good bowling performance, and we didn't let up in the field, which is important, even when they were putting in a little bit of a recovery.
Well, we have Sam Lavery with us this week to answer your questions. So let's get straight into the question section for this week. Welcome to the question section. And this week we have Sam Lavery, who's a national manager and coach at Pro Coach Cricket Academy, which is one of the largest in the UK. Sam has been a coach for about 12 years and works with players right up to the county level. To find out more information about Sam Lavery or the Pro Coach Cricket Academy, please visit www.procricketcoachingacademy.com. All right, guys, our first question is from Josh, and he says, I'm a young player who plays at a decent level. I'm a batsman with natural ability and usually have a good technique. But lately, I've struggled to keep composure and have exaggerated the way I play shots, which usually results in me slogging. This happens in the nets, and it is the off-season here in Australia, but I'm thinking of trying to step up in the level of cricket I play. Perhaps Sydney Grade cricket? I want to know any ideas of how I can overcome this issue with my composure. So what do you think, Sam?
Right, well, I think firstly I'd like to say it's good that you're showing a desire to actually play at a higher level and you're thinking about things in the off-season, so that's a good start already. From the actual composure angle of it and the way you're thinking about your cricket and playing the shots that you're playing, I think one of the things we could add in is possibly just by trying to have a little bit more of a plan when we're batting, and trying to think about the shots that we could be playing to a particular bowler. So one of the things I would say is, at the start of each over, when we've got a bowler coming into bowl, just try and have a little bit of a plan in our head of what sort of shots we may possibly play if the ball's bowled in a specific area. So for a fast bowler, for instance, we may have 3 or 4 shots that we're looking to play, and that's pretty much it. So rather than thinking we've got a wide range of 8, 9, 10, even 15 different shots that we're looking to play at any one time, just maybe restrict the amount of shots we're looking to play and make sure we play those ones very well. So, for a fast bowler, for instance, you could give yourself the option of a drive shot, which effectively covers an on-drive all the way around to the covers. So, just by giving yourself one shot, that's the front foot covered to a decent degree. And then maybe we're thinking about cutting and pulling, and that's it. And just think about doing those shots well and the technique that we need to play those shots. That should set you up in a reasonable position to start with. I think sometimes one of the things that overawes young cricketers is thinking to play lots of different shots all the time. And I think sometimes just keeping it simple, having a bit more of a basic plan about how we're going to approach the game is a good start. And the other thing is just trying to have maybe a little bit of a routine and trying to stay relaxed when we're doing it. So rather than just looking up and the bowlers running in and not thinking about what we've been doing or not having any idea or plan of how we're going to actually play the ball. Just try and stay nice and relaxed, think about the shots we want to play, and try not to get too adventurous sometimes, which seems to be a little bit of a weakness that you've got at the moment. And in doing that, you might think about these two or three shots you've got. You might think, what are the key things I've got to do to play them well, which are going to stop them looking like slogs? And if you're slogging, it's often not that you're playing the shot any differently. Maybe you're just playing it a lot earlier and you're slogging the ball up in the air, or you're not getting your weight moving in the right direction. And these things are very difficult to control when we're thinking about playing a wide range of shots, whereas when we simplify down to two or three different shots for a specific bowler, it's a lot easier to think about how we can go about playing the shots technically. So if we can simplify the range of shots we're going to do and then we're actually going to play and then think about how we're going to play them, that might be a reasonable start. I'm not sure what you think about that.
I think game plan is the good phrase that you use there, knowing exactly what you need to do against specific types of bowling. Because one thing I see a lot of with young bowlers, young batsmen, I should say, is that they face a lot of, say, maybe seam up right arm over bowling in the nets. So they've got they've got a plan for that. They've got an idea of what the ball's going to be doing. It's probably going to nipping in a bit, maybe swinging away a little bit. They've got an idea of what's happening. But you put that same batsman up against a left arm over bowler who's swinging the ball into them, and suddenly they're all at sea. They don't know what they're doing. They haven't got a plan because all the angles have changed. They don't have a particularly good on drive because not a lot of people do have a particularly good on drive. They don't have an easy way of scoring. That's just an example. We don't know if Josh is having that problem, but that's just an example of what can happen if you're not practicing all the different ways that you can practice and come up with a plan against the left arm over bowler who's swinging the ball in, the left arm round bowler who is turning the ball away. You know, the typical sort of left arm spinner. The difference between where the ball would go when you hit it between a leg spinner and an off spinner. You know, with an off spinner, the ball's going to be going on the leg side more. You're probably looking to drive in an arc, probably between mid wicket and mid off, quite a straightish mid off. Whereas with a leg spinner, because the ball's generally turning away from the right-handed batsman, your arc might be from a straightish mid on through to extra cover. So it's important to have a plan, and then it's important to practice that plan in the nets in a way that you know is going to work. And finally, I think it's important to have a technique that you can back yourself to be able to play whatever shots it is that you choose, because it's no good thinking, I'm going to hit this off-spin bowler through mid-on. If you haven't got an on-drive to speak of, you'll just end up swishing across the line and at best hitting it through square leg, or at worst, you know, getting bowled because you're not used to the face of the bat.
I think one thing you see in a lot of young cricketers is maybe the lack of ability to build an innings, and there's usually quite a simple reason for that, is that when they start their innings, they play the shots they know, and they play the shots they're comfortable with, and the ones they know they can play well. And like you say, often that is driving down the ground or through the covers, or maybe cutting or pulling, and they're the ones they're familiar with, they're the ones they practice all the time. But as the innings goes on, they look to expand more, and they start dipping into new shots that they maybe don't play so often, and they want to play more exciting shots, and they want to score faster. And it's these shots that, like you say, if they're not practiced and they're not tried and tested, these are the ones that are more likely to get into trouble. So maybe a little bit more time could be spent on some of these shots during net situations. And also, like you said, if possible, some a little bit more time could be spent on facing different types of bowlers as well. I'm sure you know the value of a good spinner, especially in junior cricket. If you get a very good spinner in junior cricket, he'll take sides apart, because a lot of the time young cricketers aren't familiar with playing high quality spin. So good spinners in junior cricket are very successful. Good quick bowlers can still be dealt with to a degree, because people practice against them a bit more.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, when you're practicing in the nets, a lot of kids will just see a spinner and their eyes will light up and they'll start smashing it all over the place.
Charge down the pitch.
It looks good when you absolutely cream it through mid wicket, but it doesn't look so great when you did play the same shot in the middle and deep mid wicket standing under it and saying thanks very much. So, it's what it boils down to for me is have a plan, practice that plan, and make sure your technique is good enough to allow you to use that plan when you're up against different types of bowling. And that way, then you can just play each ball on its merits because you know what your plan is.
All right, guys, our second question is from Vibhav, and he says, I've read the Fast Bowler's Bible, but please explain to me more about hip drive and bowling action. Well, before I hand this over to you, David, I've personally read the Fast Bowler's Bible by Ian Pond, and it's actually a completely illustrated guide to fast bowling that mirrors some of the things in Ian Pond's Pitch Vision Academy course. It covers everything about fast bowling, including the training tips, the mental approach, and the bowling action itself. So without further ado, David, how would you explain the hip drive to Vibhav?
It does talk about hip drive in the book. So Sam, maybe you can tell us a bit more about it when it comes to fast bowling.
I've actually dipped in and out of the book a few times, and there's some real good information in there. And Ian Pont's got a lot of good information for quicks, young and old, I'd say. So if you are going to pick things up, have a look on the website. There'll be some good stuff that Ian's got written in there. As far as hip drive goes, I think there's a couple of key things that we're looking to do. One is to get ourselves into a strong position at the point of release, so our hips are well aligned with the rest of our body, because on the point of release, we're pretty much going to be in a front-on position where everything's in the straight, in the same line. So we want to be in a strong position with our body so we can generate power from that. The other thing that hip drive is going to do, really, it's really going to get our body weight, obviously starting through our hips, but the rest of our body weight continuing to move forward, and we get through that delivery stride a lot more. And getting through that delivery stride, which is probably a phrase which is banding around, people talk about wanting to get through our bowling stride or delivery stride. The reason we're wanting to do that is to keep our momentum going forward, keep the pace we've generated through our run-up travelling towards the batsman, and carry on aiding that momentum in the direction we want to put it. And ultimately, that's going to increase the pace that we're going to get on the ball. A lot of young cricketers, or maybe cricketers that aren't quite so fit, might charge in reasonably fast, but because their body's not strong enough, or their core's not strong enough, or because they haven't synchronised the pattern of their body and their lower body, they can't actually drive the hips through, or they don't drive the hips through in the same way. And as a result of that, a lot of that momentum that's generated, and a lot of the force that they'd ideally be looking to produce, they can't then transfer into the ball. But through driving the hips is just one part of the mechanism that's going to produce a quick delivery.
Yeah, I see hip drive as what's happening. Ian Pond calls it the powerhouse of the bowling action. It's what's happening when your back foot lands, then your front foot lands, and then then the rest of your body seems to come through behind it. And what's happening is that the energy that you've generated by landing your front foot and bracing your front foot has got to get up from your foot all the way up through your body, up through your hips, through your shoulders, into your arm, into your fingers, and into the ball. And the only way you're going to effectively do that is to make sure that your hips are driving through powerfully, almost like somebody taking a penalty in a football match. That idea of that hip snapping through as quickly as possible. Again, as part of, as you said, Sam, as part of an overall movement of the whole body. But it's a critical part, because if you get that wrong and your hip just slightly trails behind, then you lose a hell of a lot of power going through the body. Instead of it transferring up through your hips and onwards towards the ball, it's suddenly lost. It suddenly vanishes because the hip's trailing behind. And also, it leads to a little bit more of a twisting of the spine, which can be dangerous. You know, we all know about how easy it is to hurt your back as a fast bowler. So in terms of safety as well, that hip drive, making sure that at the point of delivery, both hips are facing down the wicket is really important for speed and injury prevention.
A good illustration of the importance of the hips is the bowling action is effectively a sequential movement where not only do different parts of the body have to peak in the velocity or the speed that they move at, but they've also got to do so in a specific order. And obviously, the snapping of the wrist or the fingers is probably the final movement in that. That's the last thing that has an influence on the speed of the ball. But if you look at the hips, the hips is obviously very, very early on in that sequence. So you go hips through the core, through the actual body moving forwards. Then you've got the shoulder rotation. Okay, then you've got your head moving forwards further, and then obviously you've got the arm, the wrist, the fingers, etc. So the hips is a very, very early process in that. If you think about throwing a ball, I'm sure everyone's done a drill where they've thrown a ball from their knees and compared to throwing it from their feet. And the reason, again, is the legs and the hips being able to move and rotate. I'm not sure you're like at throwing, but I know if I throw and I don't use my legs and I'm kneeling on the floor and I can't use my hips to my maximum, because it's an early part of that sequential movement, probably 50% is lost straight away. So if we're not going to work the hips effectively, we could be losing a lot of that power, like you said, just because it's such a key thing, because it's early on in the movement and it's a big movement as well, and it's a powerful part of the action. I was actually looking at some videos which covered something which relates to this. I think one thing that helps that hip drive as well is the timing of the foot landing. If the bigger the gap between the front foot and the back foot landing is, puts more weight on that back leg, and it's going to slow that momentum of the body weight and the hips driving through. If you look at some of the great bowlers in the world now, past and present, people like someone like Dale Steyn, front and back foot land very, very close together, and as a result his body weight travels forward very well, his hips rotate very well, and he passes over his front leg very, very quickly, because he's not absorbing a lot of energy into the ground when his back leg's when his back foot's landing. So his weight's allowed to travel forward through around his front hip, back hip, and drive through, and he can carry his momentum on forwards. A lot of will get onto get into a big lean back, and they'll sit on that back foot, and as a result of that, through leaning back, the body weight goes backwards. Sitting on that back foot makes it a lot harder to drive that back hip through, and a lot of power's lost in the end. So one thing that might help is just the sort of timing of those feet landing as well, trying to keep them as close together as possible.
Yeah, definitely. If that's something, if you're wondering why your action isn't producing as much pace as you think it should be, then your hip drive is a good place to look first, because that hip trailing just leads to or as you say, that sitting back just leads to the hip trailing, and then you just bowl a little dibbly dobbly medium pace, or again, as Ian Pont says, the ball comes out like a handful of confetti.
and that's how it looks, and I'm sure everyone's experienced that before. Sometimes no one can get it perfect every time, and everyone's bowled one like that sometimes, so the timing's not quite there, you don't get the drive through the hips, or another part of the action doesn't come right, and that is how it comes out, isn't it? Mid-wicket's quickly on his way to go and pick it up.
And the other thing I would say is, although hip drive is a very important part of it, we mustn't forget about the rest of the action as well. You know, you've got to make sure that your front foot landing's good. You've got to make sure that your shoulders are rotating and you're following through correctly, and everything is working in a good sequence. So you don't want to obsess about the hip drive. Think, well, that's the answer to all my problems, if I can just get that right.
Hip drive's not the be-all and end-all, because if that was it, a lot more people would be bowling at 90 miles an hour, wouldn't they?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but it's a good place to look, especially if you're one of those guys who thinks, I should be bowling, you know, I've got plenty of muscles, I should be bowling faster, why am I not? It's a good place to start looking.
Thanks for that, guys. Our last question is from Evert, and he says, how do you rectify a cover drive? The batsman is moving his body with a back lift over, and then he plays a straight drive when the cover drive is on. What type of exercises can I give him to rectify this problem? His leg and foot positions are fine. So what do you think about this, Sam?
Okay, well, firstly, just to confirm that his leg and foot positions are fine for his cover drive, one of the causes of a cover drive going straight when it should be going through the covers is going to be hitting the ball early. So I'd just like to confirm, first of all, that he's getting his front leg nice and bent and he's getting his weight forward into the ball. It does sound like he's probably hitting the ball too early anyway, but saying his leg and foot positions are fine, we just want to make sure that his leg position, although his foot is close to the ball and his legs are crossing that direction, just make sure that his knee's bending into the ball, into the shot, so his body weight's continuing to move in that direction and he's getting his head and his body forward actually over the ball. If that leg's straight, his body ends up sitting back, and if he makes contact next to his foot, he's still way out in front of his body, and as a result, the face will close. The ball's going to come a lot straighter rather than into the covers where it should be. Assuming he's got that right, though, I would still suggest it sounds as if, slightly as if he's hitting the ball a little bit too early, and that's not a massive issue. It's something that I see a lot in cricketers, young and old, every day, really, and I'd say with young batsmen, especially when you get real talented young batsmen, that's one of the biggest things that you see is technically they can be very good, but they're often too early onto the ball because they see the ball very early and they're very eager to go out and hit it, especially with a wide ball into the covers. You've got to play the ball a little bit later than you would for a straight drive, yet the excitement of seeing a full wide ball often creates the batsman to go out and actually chase the ball and hit it earlier than they would do for a straight drive. But I mean, the actual point of contact for a cover drive needs to be a little bit later than a straight drive, and later still than an on drive, which is out in front of the body. Ways to rectify playing the ball too early. It's just a case of firstly practice and sticking to having a mindset of focusing solely on playing the ball late. Good little drills to do. Simple things with tennis balls. So bobble feeds with tennis balls, letting the ball bounce two or three times from an underarm feed, and then really trying to bounce the ball as you hit it. So hitting the ball so late that it's going straight into the ground and bouncing up in the air. So, for instance, if you were doing it, if you're doing it in a sports hall, you could have a target cover where you'd like to bounce the ball over the top of. I mean, for a straight drive in a net situation, I'll do these a lot with guys where I'll feed the ball and they've got to try and bounce the ball. So they'll hit it so late, the bat's angled down, they're playing it back between their feet. And as they're playing it so late, the ball's going to bounce up over my head as the feeder. And similarly, it can set itself a target up in cover. But it is important to realise that playing the ball through the covers, and the wider you get, the later you've got to play the ball. The other potential option could be just purely the position of the bat. The feet and the legs sound like they're in a good position. If he's got his back left over, I'm presuming that means over the stumps. So if his back is coming from a good position, maybe the path of the bat isn't moving directly to the ball, and maybe the path of the bat is actually coming round in a bit of an arc. So the path of the bat, rather than going directly from just over the top of off stump towards the ball, is maybe coming out wide and taking a bit of a circle out wide around the offside. So the top, by the time it actually meets the ball, it's travelling in a different direction than you'd actually hope. So that's the other possibility. And if so, again, very simple things like practicing in front of the mirror, just seeing that swing coming through nice and straight, and just getting someone to assess it every time. But closed exercises with tennis balls, with drop feeds, things like that are a very good way just to line up your backswing and make sure everything's suitably in order, really.
You mentioned the position of the bat there, the alignment of the bat, and I think that's an important thing to talk about. I've got a player who's got this particular technical foible themselves, but what they do is they're quite a talented player, and they compensate for it, and they end up playing a cover drive anyway, which is quite clever to see how how a good player adapts to the technical flaw but still manages to end up doing it right anyway. What happens with this player, and what I see, it's rare, but what I see with some players is they get their feet in the right position, but instead of turning their shoulders, so the back lift with the cover drive, of course the back lift has to go over the middle stump or even leg stump if you're driving quite wide, they're not rotating their shoulders, so the bat is going out in a straight line. So when they go to play the drive, all they can do, they can't hit it through the covers because they haven't rotated their shoulders. They have to hit it much straighter, have to hit it through mid-off or even straighter. So it looks all twisted. So in the end, you've got the bat pointing straight down the wicket, but you've got the feet in the cover drive position. It looks all over the place. Now, what my player does, so we've decided not to do anything about it, we've just decided that he'd carry on doing it. What he does is the bat goes out straight like that. He doesn't rotate his shoulders, but the last second he uses his wrists to readjust the bat position and flick it through the covers with a kind of wristy drive. So it works for him. It seems to work for him. So you know we're not gonna change that. So which is an interesting way to compensate. But if it was causing him a problem, It's not something you can coach to say, right, you know, get the bat out into that position, then use your wrists to compensate.
I think that's a bit of natural talent, isn't it, really? And
natural compensation taking over. What I'd say to a player who I wouldn't see it, I'm not seeing their shoulders get around, and you can see this very easily. You can just, when you're giving them throwdowns or a bowling machine or even tennis ball feeds, if their backlift for the cover drive isn't going back over the leg stump or back over the middle stump, you know there's a problem there because the alignment of the bat is going to be wrong. So the way that I use to deal with that particular problem, normally, by the way, it's the other way around. Normally, the backlift is going back over straight, too straight, or over leg stump, and they get themselves closed off, can't hit it through the leg side. That's what normally happens.
That's probably 90% of children you'd see, I would have thought as well.
Exactly, because you know a lot of kids they're looking for that cover drive, but you do get the old one who it's the other way around. They're looking more for the on drive and the straight drive, and they end up playing it even when they should cover drive it. So the way I deal with that is have a series of cones set up for an off drive, an extra cover drive, a cover drive, and almost a square drive, not quite a square drive. And that last one, you wouldn't want to really be coaching, but it's kind of like an overcompensation to encourage someone to over-twist their shoulders around. And then what you do is you feed them with a tennis ball or a bowling machine or just throw downs with a cricket ball, and you get them to hit the ball to each of the cones, getting wider and wider to each of the cones. And that encourages them to get the feel right for getting their shoulders around. And then the bat should end up pointing towards the cone that they've hit the ball towards. And if it's not pointing towards that correct cone, then they need to get the shoulders around a little bit more. And to encourage that even further, what you can do is you can get them to play the shot and then walk towards the cone that they've played the shot towards. And so they're looking through their hands. The bat is pointing towards the cone that they've played the shot towards, and then they walk towards the cone, and then they walk back again, and they do it then for the wider one and the wider one and the wider one until they're getting so wide you would never encourage a player to drive a square if they're driving because it's too dangerous, but for this it's just a tool to allow them to get the feel for moving the shoulders around. So when they go back to playing against real bowlers, that shoulder rotation feels like a very small one because they've done such a great big one in the first, you know, in practice.
I think that's the key word you said there is letting the batsman get a feel for how it should be. Mm. So they're feeling how it, when it's obviously very overemphasized, they get that feel of the body position, the path of the hands, the path of the bat, the position of their feet. And they get that feel. And sometimes that's what it is. They've just got to get a feel for the positions they need to be in. And like you said, if you overemphasize it in a closed situation where it's very restricted and you can control what's going on, when you put them into a game situation or a net situation, obviously they're not going to recreate it to the same degree, but hopefully they can get partway there to start with, and as they go on and keep practicing it, they can gradually get more and more of a rotation of those shoulders and line themselves up better and better. And it's that feel that they need to get to understand the position they need to be in. Yeah. And until they do feel and experience that position, it's very difficult to explain it, I think.
Definitely. And it's because it's quite rare, it's a hard one to spot. So, keep your eyes peeled on the back lift if you're coaching someone in that situation. And that should give you a clue when they're cover driving. But as we said, most kids, it's the other way around. So, you know,
most kids go the other way. And miss out on the half volley through the leg side.
Yeah, and you don't want to be drilling them with that kind of drill, because that's going to reinforce a technique.
That's going to make them worse, isn't it?
Yeah, instead get them working on their on drives.
Mm. And I think that's where coaches have got to be very careful that they apply the right drill to the right person, and they don't just universally give a drill to a group, because everyone's different, everyone has their own natural strengths and weaknesses, and everyone's naturally set up to hit in a certain direction, maybe slightly better than other people are. Mm-hmm. And that's where we've got to try and be as specific as we can, especially when we're working in groups. And we've got to try and be as careful as we can when we're giving out advice and giving them drills to do, to make sure that it's the drill that's going to take them in the right direction and it's going to improve the natural ability they've got, rather than improving what they've got. It's overemphasizing maybe their weak points. And that's what everyone's got to be careful with, the coach, making sure that they're picking the right thing to do for the right person.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, how many times do you see group coaching where it's a straight drive and the kids are hitting it through the offside, but you rarely see them hitting it through the onside unless, you know, it's an accident. Whereas, you know, especially when I'm teaching younger kids, I like to start with the on drive, you know, because that gets their balance and their head position a little bit more aligned than starting with an off drive or a cover drive, which is encouraging you to tip over to the offside. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. Have a look at the kids individually and make, if you're doing drive work with them, the same with adults, not just kids, then maybe adjusting the target area that they're trying to hit in depending on the technical issues that you see with each individual player.
Thanks for that, guys. And as usual, we have our Pitch Vision competition where the listener emails in their question for the week. All they have to do is email into mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com, and in the title they've entered podcast competition, and they're immediately in the running for a Pitch Vision Academy course. So David, there's no keeping question this week, so it's going to be a bit of a challenge for you.
Yeah, I'm always a bit biased towards the keeping questions. If you're a keeper and you're listening, bear that in mind. But I think we're going to go for Evert, or Ever, however you pronounce it. Sorry if we've pronounced that wrong. That was an interesting one because I've had a similar player that I coach who's had a similar problem, and he's got me thinking about how to rectify that. So, let's go for Evert's question about the cover drive.
Nice. Congratulations, Evert or Evert. All you have to do to enter this competition is email us your question at mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com, and in your subject title, please enter podcast competition, and you could go into the running to win a Pitch Vision Academy course. And you can also get more information, tips, advice, and tricks on our website at www.pitchvision.com. The site is updated daily and includes forums to chat with other cricketers around the world. And you can also subscribe to the Pitch Vision Academy show free on iTunes, or you can click the link on the show's page that will take you directly to iTunes to subscribe. Stay tuned for our next show on the 28th of May. And so if you want to get in touch with us, want to enter the podcast competition, or you have any questions, please email us at mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. That's mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. So thanks for your time, Sam and David, and we thank you for listening. We hope to see you next time. So from Sydney, Australia, this is Kevin Sampat signing off.
And this is David Hinchcliffe in the UK.